You're listening to Drinking on the Job, DOTJ. I'm your host, John Coyle. Drinking on the Job is a toast to the culture of food, wine, and all things fermented. We'll be talking with winemakers, musicians, artists, late-night bartenders, scoundrels, and more. It's time to grab a glass before its last call.
Maria Sinski joins me today. She's a chef, author, wine guru, and entrepreneur. She's here to talk about her new project that is going to affect the world in ways you don't even know yet. Okay, I'm sitting here with my favorite person in the world. She was on a previous episode where we talked about truffle hunting and caviar hunting and eating and dining in her amazing, amazing winery, Robert Sinski. Today, we're going to talk about the Sinski Napa dream that has come true. They have a space now for their wine and food that's all sourced from their vineyards, and it's a great story. So, Maria, everyone wants to know, give us, break the story here. What is going on? Talk to us about the Wilding Farm.
Well, gosh, this is going to take a long, long time. We've always had the whole farm philosophy. That's why we, you know, Robert Sinski Vineyards, it started in the vineyards. We've always been growers first. And along the years, we've inserted fruit trees, fig trees, sheep, all these different things that we wanted to grow into the vineyards. And so we had these six vineyards and a lot of food growing on them. And let me tell you, driving around trying to harvest stuff besides grapes,
right,
and bringing it all together to serve it to people, I would dream while I was doing this, and I'd be picking pears here and I'd be picking figs here. The dream was, why can't they all be in one place? You know, even the vineyards, why can't they all be in one place? Why do I have to drive so far? And it wasn't even that far, but it's just like when you're waking up so early and you have to like pick it before we open for business. And so we had an opportunity to sell the physical winery buildings and the vineyard around the winery, which was in the Stag's Leap district.
Right. Incredible.
And my father-in-law had built the winery. And so if you can imagine, you know, he's the one who established the property, and we were always living, Rob and I, Rob first because he took it over from his father, and then when I married him, me, we were always living in his shadow, and we were living and we were doing business in a space that it wasn't our dream.
Right.
It had become part of our dream, but we always felt like the kids that were invited to the party but had to, you know, kind of just kind of reel it in a little bit. And so, you know, we had a lot of fires that visited us in 2020.
Sure. Yeah.
They canceled everybody's fire insurance. You know, sorry, folks, you know, this is a reoccurring thing.
Let me give you a flashback. I remember you were devastated by the fires. COVID was hitting, you and I were on the phone, and you were so saddened by the fires and the current events. And I said, have you ever thought about just selling? And you said, if the right person price came along, yes. So this happened, but it happened.
That's so funny.
Right. I mean, I literally remember that as I'm sitting here with you. But what's crazy is what I love is that you took this money and now you're making something that is your own, that is like, it's visionary. It's like, I joke, it's going to put the culinary and wine world tilted on its axis when people really understand what you're doing there.
Well, I don't know that.
It's a grand statement, grandiose.
But the thing is that because we've always had this farming and food, and it's just what we do, and we're not flashy. And the winery was kind of flashy. It was a beautiful place, but flashy. But it wasn't our personality. Even though we tried to put our personality on it, we did a remodel. We finally found our place, our personality. We found a rundown space. It's just over the hill from where we live, over the hill from the Capa Vineyard in northern Carneros. And it used to house adults living with Down syndrome.
Oh, wow.
And they housed women and men. They had a woman's house and a men's house, 22 adults. And it shut down during the pandemic because they tried to keep the residents there during the pandemic, but then they realized they couldn't keep them safe from COVID. And so they dispersed all the residents, and this place sat empty. And it was a nonprofit. They couldn't raise the money. So when we came along, they were going to sell it to a developer because the land was big enough to put like 7 to 10 houses on it. And that had fallen through. And no one was interested. This property was like a white elephant. You know, there's a multi-purpose room. There's a dining hall. There's several houses. There's an organic food orchard. We call it the petting zoo for grapes, all table grapes. There's a ton of stuff planted on it.
Right.
And no one was biting. Huh. So Rob came home one day and he's like, oh, I found it. And he goes, Vine Village, you know, have you ever heard of it? It's right over the hill and it connects to this property. And I'm like, what? And we went over there. I was like, oh my God. It was in a complete, you know, it wasn't in total decay, but it was decaying.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know. This is a big project. But when I stepped on the property, there was just the positivity. There was just like energy there. And I sound like a total Californian. I'm from New York and I'm not a tree hugger.
Right.
But when I walked onto that property, the serenity of it, the peacefulness, and there just happens to be a gray heron rookery, the largest one in Northern California, in the eucalyptus trees.
Oh, wow.
So in the spring, they all come in, they feed off the pond, and they raise their babies. And it's crazy to see these dinosaur-like birds flying. But it is, I was like, wow, this is special.
And there was already stuff planted there?
They used to have grapes planted there. They have table grapes now, but they had Chardonnay. They had several vineyards there, and they were making a small production wine. Right now, there are no wine grapes.
Right. So you are still going to make wine?
We're still making wine. Right. We still have the vineyards. Right. Okay, so we have you know, the Vandal, we have Old Sonoma, we have Cintia.
You'll continue to make wine.
We'll continue to make wine.
Okay.
And we have lots of inventory. We hold our wines back for several years before release. So I've
been in those caves. Yeah. It's amazing.
There's not going to be any gap here. Right. You know, this is just part of the flow.
It's good that people are relieved right now. I mean, by the way, we're drinking your 2017 four vineyards that you are.
I'm trying not to shoot it.
Yeah. I know, right. Exactly. We had 2013 Marcian. We had incredible whites, the Pinot Blanc, and just great, great wines today. So this is what we're drinking. Mike, the engineer, is very happy as well.
You stole this from the bottle. Did they know you didn't?
I did. No, I don't care.
So this property, you know, we're the thought of someone building 10 houses on this property, like, just made our, like, skin peel off our bodies.
Yeah,
like,
sure. That's your
to
neighbors.
To destroy this. Right. And we said, okay, Rob, if you really want to buy it, buy it. And this would make a great home for us. Not us personally, but a great home for our vineyard operations because we are farmers. We can now have, there's 3 houses on the property. People can come and stay. You know, we can have, you know, rental, whatever. We don't know yet. This is so new. And we can grow a lot of our food that we've already been growing, but now we can grow more.
And to your dream earlier, why do we have to go so far? Now you can walk out your door.
I can walk over the hill.
Right.
Already what we've planted and we're growing as far as vegetables is amazing. Right now we have kale and all kinds of herbs, and we just started the peas and the favas. The potatoes are planted. We have beets. We have carrots. And we want to apply to have a farm stand. We're going to eventually put in like a couple hundred chickens, laying chickens and meat chickens.
Right. What are you doing with your sheep?
Oh, the sheep right now, we're going to move them over to – we also bought an adjacent property that we're going to start grazing the sheep on. But they're in Cintia Sonoma Vineyard right now.
Okay.
So they'll be moved over. But it's going to be a real, like, full circle, thriving, all in one place. And we hope to get the permit to do a small production facility. So there won't be any tasting. I mean, and we don't want to do that to neighbors. We don't want to do it to...
You're kind of done with that anyway.
Well, the roads are really small there. And I can't imagine, you know, creating any more traffic on those roads, even though if we did a tasting room, it would be so tiny and it'd be by appointment. But just to be able to make like 10,000 cases.
Yeah. I mean,
or 8,000 cases or 5, whatever. Just a small amount, not a ton. And if we want to make additional wine, we can make it with someplace else with a bigger production facility and do it like most people do it in the Valley. They do it someplace else.
Right, like a custom crush.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You know, for people listening who aren't super familiar or haven't been there, you've been on the point of hospitality for the Robertsinski Wines for a very long time. You're an amazing chef. The things you throw out. I mean, you're a cookbook author. You are a serious chef. You come here and you guest. You're guesting at Popina this Sunday. Anyone listening? Well, no, it'll be done by then. But Maria's going to be there on Sunday.
Things come and go, you know.
Yeah, and she comes. You've guested at El Buco. I mean, you're an incredibly talented chef. But you always were in the winery doing this large dinner scale. And we were talking earlier, and you literally every microgreen on a plate is managed by you, the cleaning the dishes afterwards by you. And at this point, you're just like, fuck this. I'm so tired of this. Now you're going to have your own kitchen.
Well, now I can actually do what I want to do, because the winery was almost a restaurant, but not, because we had all these restrictions. You couldn't serve food a la carte. Right. It was a set menu. It was always paired with wines. So we couldn't be free. We couldn't add stuff on. People couldn't order additional food. It was like, this is the menu. This is what you get. A lot of people didn't understand that. And that was out of deference to restaurants like in Yountville, restaurants surrounding us. You know, if we're taking away their restaurant business, it's not fair to them.
Right.
We're supposed to be agricultural. We're supposed to be a winery. I was fine with that. But I always wanted more because I come from a restaurant background. Mm. Yeah. And so we bought this space in downtown Napa. It's a 6,000 square foot building. It's law offices now. And we're attempting to turn it into a hospitality space. But that's very complicated. And I don't know if everything's harder to do in California, but it seems like there's a lot of
restrictive
city mafia.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, we're in the city now. The city loves business. It's going to be great. But I'm realizing you trade one thing for another. You trade the county for the city. And everybody's super nice that works in the city offices. All the planners, the health department, they're all really great people, but it's just there's so many things you have to go through to get a project off the ground. And so we're at that space where we're in that place right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's as of late in the last year, they were trying to put some public toilets in California on the street. Porta Johnny's, and they were
that was a public bathroom in a park over in Coal Valley,
and it was like millions of dollars.
Yes,
and it was so absurd because the cost of it was like $250,000, but then once you do the filing, the permits, the red tape, it gets into millions, and that's kind of what's wrong about California, people are trying to fix. I think it's
because people don't talk to each other, and so someone red flags it, and then someone sees a red flag and they're like, oh, there must be an issue with this, and then the process stops, and then you got to get started again. And I mean, it's bureaucracy, but we've always had bureaucracy in everything we do. It just seems that now we feel it more. I mean, or everybody's afraid of making a mistake or letting something through, or it's not going to be right, or it's not going to, or you're lying to them. I mean, to be honest, a lot of people go in and they're smoke and mirrors and they propose something. It's not really what they want. They want to do something else, but they're trying to game the system.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's why we all suffer, is because of these gamers and the people aren't truthful. And so then they get super restrictive because they've been screwed by other people. Right. So it's kind of this catch-22.
I hear Gavin Newsom talk a lot about this. Gavin.
I know Gavin very well. Yeah. And I have to say one thing about Gavin Newsom. I worked with him for years. We were partners in a restaurant. He's actually a really good guy.
Yeah.
And he say whatever you want to say about Gavin. I was his employee.
Yeah.
He treated all of his employees so well.
Yeah. You were the chef at?
At Plump Jack.
At Plump Jack, right.
And I opened Balboa Cafe, Plump Jack, Squaw Valley Inn. And Gavin was amazing to his employees.
Yeah,
he really was.
I'm so happy to hear that because I would love him come the DNC convention, whatever, him step up and say it's time for Joe to step aside, which can legally happen. The Democratic Party can step in and do something.
Okay,
the
thing is Gavin is from California, and everybody thinks we're all tree huggers and we're losers or whatever. But we have a pretty good economy out there. It's very expensive. It does leave people by the wayside, but that's everywhere. I mean, the problem, we're talking about social issues now, but you judge a society by the lowest common denominator,
right.
And whether it's California or New York or Alabama or Maine or whatever place, it's like the standards are, we treat people that are lowest on the totem pole,
yeah,
the worst.
Yeah, it's true, and it's yeah, it's a reflection of the state. But you know, California unfairly gets put under the spotlight constantly. I more because of the size of it, but there's more innovation coming out of California than any other state.
It's not perfect, yeah. I don't think any state is perfect, and you know, and the wine industry certainly takes its hit, yeah, its regulation from not just the state but also the feds. Mm. So there's a lot of layers there, and you have to deal with that. So, yeah.
So you know, you have to deal with it. So let's get back to your.
I have to deal with that. People wonder why, like, we drink so much. Yeah. So Wilding is the name
of
the farm.
Cheers.
Thank
you. Let's drink your Pinot.
Should we clink?
Yeah. Clink,
should we
sure.
Clink? Okay,
there we go.
Did all we right. hear that?
Yeah, we got it.
So Wilding. So the idea was to have a very small tasting room because we're not going to go for a tasting room on this property. We would love to keep it natural as possible. And so hence a very small production facility. But the idea was to have a small tasting room in downtown Napa. And then since you can't serve food in your tasting room because we have a wine grower's permit for the tasting room, mm-hmm, you're not allowed to serve food. You can serve packaged foods. And I'm like, you know, I've already kind of done the tasting room thing anyway, so that's fine. I'm not interested in doing food in the tasting room. We'll just build a restaurant. So the tasting room has now morphed into this restaurant. So then someone says, well, you should get a liquor license. And then someone said, well, the lottery's this year. You should like put your hat in the ring for the lottery. And we're like, there's 10 licenses up for grabs. And we're like, okay, we'll try.
That's the way it works?
Yeah.
It's a lottery. Wow.
So they offer these, you know.
Have to pay? Like,
you still have to pay, yeah.
Hundreds of thousands
of
dollars?
No. It's $17,000.
Oh, that's
but
not
the
bad.
The catch is, if you get a license in the lottery, you can't resell it for more than what you paid for it.
Okay, fair.
There's like a modest adjustment for consumer price index, but it's not like this one that you bought from somebody for $300,000 and you turn around and sell it for $750,000.
Right.
So it's not. There's no bearing of the market on the price. So
you were labor at you. So you were chef at a couple great restaurants. Then you are the chef, bottle washer, dishwasher at Robinson's.
Cooking, bottle washer.
Everything.
No, now I'm the earth mover.
Oh, so you're doing the that's
so
farming?
I am
the
earth mover. I'm the earth mover. Not only do I farm, but I also push projects through now. So I have to move the earth to get this stuff done.
Wow, okay.
So we have this liquor license, and now the clock is ticking. And so now we're jumping through all the hoops. Like, can we get electricity? Can we get three phase? Can we do this? Can we do that? And we don't even know yet if we can launch this thing. Because every time we go down this, is there two means of egress for fire, ingress, egress, you know.
Right, yeah.
On and on, on and on and on. I mean, it's just like, it's just amazing because I'm like, oh, yes, clear sailing now. We're on our way. And then it's like, yeah, boom.
Yeah.
Nope, we can't do that.
So paint me a picture of what this thing would look like in a perfect world 5 years from now. Like, what does it look like?
Looks like is a very small, intimate space that is very of the moment. So
talk the restaurant.
We're talking the restaurant. Okay. So we have the small tasting room,
right,
like maybe 14, 20 people max. Mm-hmm. We have this small intimate aperitivo room because the bar isn't independent of the restaurant.
Okay.
The bar is part of the restaurant. So it's an aperitivo room, like 26 seats, very small, intimate. Restaurant, 40 seats, small, intimate. I'm not a puppy mill. I don't want to be like making, you know, 1,000 meals a night.
Yeah.
I want to be very much of the farm. This is what we have. This is what we're serving tonight. Tomorrow night you might come back and we might not have it anymore because we've sold through all the potatoes.
Right.
We sold through all the fava beans. Or no, we didn't make enough cheese. Or we didn't make cheese because the goats are resting or they're having babies or whatever.
I've seen you butcher. You're breaking down animals. You're incredible.
I love to take those animals down. No, my husband always looks at me and goes, "Oh my God, I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good." Like, because I've got the knife and I'm like taking a leg off a lamb.
I think you shipped half a lamb to New York City for a dinner once. No, didn't you? Or?
No, I no. So I'm like,
what was that?
Maria's and a very old. I've had these young people come in and work in the kitchen. And they're like, "You're so old fashioned. You don't do sous vide and blah blah." I'm like, "Yeah, we don't do sous vide, and we're not doing sous vide because I'm going to teach you how to cook.
Yeah. Sous vide's for wimps. I'm sorry.
So maybe I'm not going to cook things in plastic. Yeah. I'm against plastic. So why would I cook things in plastic?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I look at the arc of your life for what a lot of pro you are.
I hope it's just not the way ending. I hope the arc's not.
No, you have a big
way. I hope my arc's super long.
Long runway in front of you. But, you know, the way you're a professional butcher or whatever. And I think about in Williamsburg a couple of years ago, there were parking lots where they would bring in fresh killed animals, and then they would teach the hipsters how to butcher an animal, how to break it down. And you were doing that for so long, you could have easily come to Williamsburg.
I really believe, yeah. I don't care if an animal, one lamb is bigger, one lamb is smaller. Yeah. So you divvy it up separate, you know. For me, it's I put lamb on the menu. I don't put lamb leg, lamb loin. We have a lamb. And if you order lamb, you might get the leg, you might get the rib, you might get you're going to get a delicious part, but I'm not going to tell you what you're going to get because we're going to sell the whole lamb and we're going to rotate through it until it's done. Right. I mean, you're not going to get the tail, obviously, because they don't have tails. We cut them off.
Okay.
Barbaric. And you're not going to get the hoof, but you're going to get some part of the lamb.
But that's the beauty of it. I mean, I don't eat a lot of meat, but I think, eating stuff that is farmed and you use the whole, tail to snout kind of analogy.
It's flexibility. And a lot of kitchens don't have the ability to be flexible, whether they have partners, they need to have this, food cost is set or the chef doesn't want to deal with a new thing every day. I've always done everything new every day.
Right.
Even at Plump Jack, I had a cook once cry. They're like, you keep changing the menu. I just learned it yesterday and now you're changing it again. I go, the techniques are the same. We're just changing the ingredients.
Right.
You know how to saute a piece of meat. This is a different type of meat. We're using a different sauce. We're using a different – it's the same. Get your head around it. He didn't last, but because he was so – his mind got in his way.
This is pre-HR days.
So people – I said, look, I'm – call me old-fashioned, but – and this was at the end of someone was leaving. I go, what have you learned here? And he goes, I learned a lot. I learned how to make, capicola. I learned how to cure, guanciale. I learned how to cure meat. I learned how to make pate. I learned how to break down whole animals. I learned how to make cheese. They think that they need to sous vide stuff and use tweezers.
Right.
But what they learn is everything.
Sure.
They learn how to harvest things. They learn how to take care of vegetables. They learn how to not mutilate things,
Right. And nothing gets wasted.
Nothing.
And I say sous vide's for wimps just because it's more chemistry than it's real kind of cooking. I think, anyone could drop a bag in a boiling water and sit there with the timer. Timer's done. Ding. It's done. Put it on a plate.
Well, I know why chefs use sous vide because, there's not a lot of people cooking in kitchens.
Right.
There's not
exactly.
It takes a lot of time to learn, teach somebody how to cook a perfect rack every single time.
Right.
Again, if it's a different size, then if they're being told to put it in the oven for 15 minutes and it's a bigger rack and then 15 minutes is raw – I have time to do that. In my kitchens, I make time.
But isn't there a skill set that's missing because of this? This is what happens.
There is.
Then you have chefs who don't know how to do it, and then they rely on this process process.
Yeah, well, that's why when people come into the kitchen, they start with the vegetables, and we work with the vegetables. And then, and I turn them on to 50,000 ways to use fava beans, 50,000 ways to use frisée, 15,000. So when the season comes, they have this repertoire of wow, I have 800 pounds of potatoes, or I have 800 pounds of eggplant, maybe 50 pounds of eggplant.
Right.
They can make eggplant croquettes. They can make baba ganoush. They can do roasted eggplant. They can do eggplant with honey and thyme. They can do fried eggplant with vinegar, like the Southern Italian way. They have in their quiver probably 20, 30 recipes for each vegetable. They have 20, 30 recipes for preparing meats, 20, 30 recipes for pasta. So they can cruise through the whole repertoire around the year through every season and say, okay, I know what to do with that.
And this is why it's so important to have a great mentor, that you mentor under somebody who's
Mentor them. I just kick their ass.
No, I know you
I
do.
Mean,
this is
literally,
great.
Literally, if they want to call me a mentor, that's great. I'm so flattered.
Yeah.
But I want to teach them something. I want them to be flexible. I want them to think. I want them to be confident. And I want them to learn to use a knife. Because, the amount of, shit that gets done, I don't know if it's okay to say that.
All you want.
But, why can't we use a Robocoup? Why can't we tell it? It's no. Learn your cuts. Learn how to mince a shallot. If there's a shallot in a vinaigrette, I don't want to see it. It can be there, but it's going to be tiny, tiny, tiny.
Right.
You know, if you're making risotto, the onion never needs can never be bigger than the grain of rice.
Right.
You know, there's and call me rigid, call me a control freak. My poor children but are that's twisted.
That's why your fucking food is so great, though.
I don't. No one knows who I am. I am fighting the silent revolution.
Right.
I'm just going to keep doing it. Cooking is what I do, it's my superpower. When I have a knife in my hand, life becomes so light and effortless. And I'm hoping with this restaurant, it's going to be such a small staff, and I'm making it purposefully small, so that everybody gets paid really well.
I love that.
And we develop this team, and everybody's taken care of,
right.
and everybody gets everybody.
Yeah, it's so important. That's a thing that maybe isn't seen that much. Is like, we're so used to seeing the abusive chef.
Yeah.
And we all know what restaurant hours were like. I just had Paul McLaughlin on from
Oceana. It's brutal. I mean, restaurants are brutal.
Brutal, brutal. And the fact that you're working for somebody who cares and like how much you're making, you can afford to pay your insurance, perfect. You know, I'm happy that you can afford to have insurance. If I can help, you know, bring that to fruition,
great. You know, it's all
about
controlling costs.
Right.
And, you know, and everybody's like, oh, you don't have enough seats in your restaurant. You know, you're not going to be profitable. I'm like, Plum Jack was 45 seats. We made a lot of money. Yes, everything's more expensive, but it's proportional.
I would say you're paying for quality. Also, like, everything's organic. Everything's coming right out of the ground. So I always tell people when they say, well, it's kind of expensive. I go, when was the last time you went to a doctor? Your copay is $50.
Yeah.
You know, like, take care of your health. Put the right things in your body.
Yeah, but people don't take care of the health. I mean, that's the thing. It's like $50. Okay, you know, $50 to go see a doctor. Oh, my God, I can't afford that.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about restaurants. Most people can't even afford to go out to a restaurant. I mean, so this is really a first world thing we're talking about. And, you know, I'm thinking about ways to integrate into the community. I would love to have, when the restaurant's closed, there's a shelter, a mission over by a couple blocks away, you know, have residents of the home in for breakfast or lunch or go there or cook, you know, do something to help the people that are the downtrodden, the people that don't have support. And I would love to be able to work that into everything we do at the restaurant. And so that a staff can volunteer on a Tuesday or a Wednesday and say, hey, you know, we're going to clear it with them, make sure that, you know, we follow all their standards, or because they have a lot of restrictions on what you can do and about food and transferring food to these places, and see, you know, if we can integrate that into what we do so that we're giving back. I mean, that is really, really important to me. It's always been important to Rob and I to give back.
Yeah. That's incredibly ambitious and wonderful.
I don't know if it's going to work, but you know, I'm going
to
try.
But the fact that it's on your kind of, to use the Oprah term, on your vision board, that's a really wonderful thing, because also, you know, it starts with the vision, and then that's how something becomes real. So this is what the restaurant looks like, right? So it's a small seat, beautiful, everything that's available that day. What does the perfect farm look like? What are you growing? Is there something you've been dying to grow that you haven't seen? You're like, you know, I can't wait to do this.
Well, the chickens, you know, I've always had small flocks of chickens. I'm raising quail right now for eggs. You know, we have a lot of predators. I mean, Napa is pretty wild still.
Sure, yeah.
And we have foxes, which are devastating when they get into a coop. And I want to raise chickens for meat, and I want to raise chickens for the restaurant. But last night I had this dream about keeping chickens alive. And it's really – everybody's like, oh, you're going to lose some. And it's like, I don't want to lose any of them. Like, you know, I know I'm going to be eating them. But I still don't want to have, like, the night of carnage where, like, basically the whole flock gets eaten by bobcats, coyotes, or foxes.
Wow.
So I'm trying to figure out a way to raise chickens. And they're only alive for 6 weeks. I mean, we're not talking about a long time, but you have to rotate them through. So when you're slaughtering, you start a new flock every week.
Okay.
Because you're going to slaughter some every week. So you have to keep rotating, keep growing them. And I want to have a really, like, happy place for chickens to grow up and then be eaten.
Right.
Is that's kind of sick and twisted. But have egg chickens too. Like, I love chickens. Chickens are like very cool. They're prehistoric.
They're smart.
They're avian reptiles.
Okay.
They're avian reptiles. They're kind of way back into the, like, you know, historical.
Right.
I mean, they look like dinosaurs, but we have pecking order, hen pecked. Like, everything they say is true about chickens.
Huh.
They peck on the one that's the weakest gets henpecked. There's a pecking order. There's the chief hen, and then there's the hen that is the dumb hen.
And so, without getting too into it, is it more built around size, like the stronger, bigger pack the little, or is it more about like life, personality?
I think it's their little
energy.
Key brains.
Yeah.
Whoever like is getting the advantage in the maybe their brain grew from a pea to like a lima bean.
Right. Okay.
Like. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't studied chickens that much, but they're pretty interesting, and I'd like to delve into chicken world.
It's so funny. You were talking about the bobcats and foxes attacking the chickens, and the only thing that came to my mind and talking about sick is like, you know those bachelorette parties with the limousines, the big stretch limos with 20 women or men for their bachelor parties, and just throw a bobcat in and roll the windows up. And we could solve a lot of the problems going up down the highway.
They used to actually come up to the winery. I'd be like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Why are you humiliating her?
Right.
Like, this is horrible.
It is. So the farm, so chickens –
goats, milking goats.
Milking goats.
Yeah, I'd like to get a permit. I'll probably never get it. I'll probably die before that happens. A permit to have a small herd of goats for making, you know, fresh goat cheese, aged goat cheese. I'd like one or two Jersey cows. Cows are amazing for fire control. We have two steer right now named Rusty and I want to say peanut butter. Rusty and Skippy. Skippy.
Rusty and Skippy. So tell me how that works for fire control.
So you can set these steers out into the forest, and we use them for fire control.
Right.
And you put the portable fence up so they stay, you know, it's an electric fence. Mm-hmm. And you kind of put them in one section, and they go through and they eat all the cover crop.
All the
brush and the bramble and all the stuff that you don't want. And they clear it out. I mean, these dudes, like, go through there, and they're awesome.
Wow.
They're super slow, but they're
methodical.
Big eyes.
Yeah.
They're Jersey steers.
All right.
But I would like to get their counterparts some Jersey milking cows and have some really nice, like, Jersey goat's milk cheeses.
So how many acres are we looking at for the farm?
84 contiguous, including our property. So it'll be 84 contiguous acres, even though they're separate parcels, they're all adjacent. So it's big. It's beautiful. I mean, you can hike up to the top of the hill and you can see everything. You turn, it's so beautiful.
Huh.
It's the most stunning, the property is stunning. And and we're not allowed to have the public on it because we don't have a use permit for that, but we invite our friends, you know, everybody's a friend, and they can come on over and we can hike up to the top and see everything. And you can pet the goats. I mean, there's two female goats.
So when can I have my first meal there? Give me a rough timeline.
Well, at the farm or at the restaurant? Because the farm is separate from the restaurant. You know, the farm is our vineyard offices.
Okay.
You know, we have all our tractors and, you know, and then the farm office. But the restaurant, if we're lucky, January 2025.
Oh,
That's
a big lift, particularly with all the red tape and bureaucracy
construction. That's when our time runs out on our liquor license. So it's just been really just a lot of anticipated, you know, hurdles.
So if the liquor license runs out, you don't renew if you're not open and serving? Is that the way that works?
Yes, you have to be open and serving. So
you got to figure that out.
We have to get a certificate of occupancy, you know, engage the license or activate it.
Yeah.
So yeah, we might be making cocktails on the street. And they do the sewer hookup just for the city of Napa is like $150,000.
Whoa.
And I was like, what? I can do that myself.
Get out of my way.
I'll take our backhoe. We'll just dig it and we'll just like screw in there.
Oh my God.
But stuff like that is it's crazy.
Yeah. It comes out of the blue. You're like, oh.
So that's why you wonder like how, you know, unless you have an existing building that had a restaurant in it, you know, that's easy. But when you take an office like a loft, it's a single story building. We take just an office and try and make it into hospitality. That's when you get all these hurdles.
That's crazy. I admire you and Rob's incredible like idea and vision to do this. It sounds like an incredible project and a lot
well,
to take
there's
over.
There's more to that project. This is just the first phase. So, so we're dreaming big. I mean, someone's like, why don't you just retire and like just take the money and run? And I'm like,
and then
thought
what?
Of doing nothing is terrifying to me. Like, I'm a goal-oriented person. I have to wake up and do something. And, you know, I got to travel the world when I was young. You know, I had no money. I went around the world. I saw every place I wanted to see. And I did it over and over again. And I did that early before I got married, before I had kids. And so, sure, I still love to travel, but it's not like I don't have to retire to do that.
No, you have something to do.
And I have bigger. Yeah. I mean, I have other projects I'm doing. You know, I'm working on a film. I'm writing a book. Yeah. You know, there's all these
things
I want to do.
Another book. So you heard Maria just wax poetically about, you know, 100 different ways to use fava beans, eggplant, all this stuff. You should pick up her cookbook.
That my cookbook's so old right now. Yeah. It's like,
but still, like it's
still relevant.
Look, you don't throw away the joy of cooking. I still have that sitting on my shelf, and I still actually roll through that for like temperatures on, you know, internal temperatures.
Well, it's 20 years old. Like, it's 21 years old now.
And still a great book.
It's still relevant.
Of course it is.
Definitely dated in design, but HarperCollins is still keeping it in print, which is really nice. But I think I'm going to add to that. I have a lot of books I want to write. Yeah. I got to find the time, you know.
I don't know when you'll find the time either with this fucking project.
You know what? You can always find time.
Yes,
you can always
true.
Find time, you know. True. You don't have to sleep that much. 8 hours, you know. That's
but
it.
You've always been kind of you know, had these big dreams. I mean, didn't Wild, you had a truffle farm for a little bit?
We did. And the thing is, we tried to grow truffles. We were in drought the whole time.
Right.
Truffle trees need water.
Right.
We didn't have the water for that.
No,
so,
you had drought and you had fires.
We had drought and fire. The fires, but it was really, we had fires because of the drought. But the thing is, it was never going to happen because we didn't have the water. And so we gave up, and now it's raining. Now we're disappearing into the ocean. There's so much water, we don't know what to do with it. And I'm like, how ironic is that?
Oh.
So, you know, we keep trying things. Yep. I mean, I don't know. Like, isn't that what life is about?
Of course.
Is just to keep trying things and
100%
thinking of new ways to do things. Yeah. And, you know, I'm never going to give up. Yeah. I mean, you know, they'll have to take, like, I don't know, the metal out of my... my cold dead hand, the knife or the like the butter churner or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. You have so much more to do and get done.
And I have a great team. I mean, I don't do it alone.
Of course, yeah.
I have Patty who works in the kitchen. She's a master's in nursing, and she's from Guatemala, and she couldn't get her license to practice nursing in the U.S. And so she works with me. She's amazing. She's become an amazing cook. Wow. Amazing jam maker, amazing cracker maker, amazing hoshigaki maker. Yeah. You know, she's tough.
Yeah, I love
it. And she works her butt off.
And she works for you, so she sees how hard you work.
Like
so it's very easy.
I say we're twins, Patty, but you grew up in Guatemala and I grew up here, but we are the same.
So we're almost at the end, but we got to talk about this starter yeast that you brought with you that I have to now pick up Sunday from Popina.
Yes.
Like, you just run around with
the
stuff?
No, but the starter's like, the starter never dies. Okay. The starter I've had for like 30-something years. Maybe I've had it longer. And I go in, one time it got so dry, it was like a block of fresh yeast. It was like I made a fresh yeast block.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this is dead. This is not going to work. And I threw it in and it activated. I fed it and it started going again. I'm like, this, hallelujah.
Right.
We have life, right?
Yeah.
So I brought some. I said, you know what? I need some more starter in New York. I have a New York starter. I have a California starter. I'm like, I'm going to add the California starter to the New York starter and see what happens. So I brought a little baggie. I packed it in my luggage. And I brought it here. So now I've made it the California starter and the New York starter, and it's going crazy.
Oh, that's great.
Like, I have to go home.
Did you make that for the tart today that we had? Was that starter?
No, the bread today was the New York starter.
Oh, okay.
And now I have a California New York starter.
Oh, wow.
So, it was exploding this morning, and now I'm going to go home, and it's going to be all the way down the counter, down the side, onto the floor.
I love the idea of you going through customs and somebody pulling you aside and go, all right, explain this.
No, I went through, I was packing. When I went through, I literally packed 50 pounds of citrus, kale, lamb in my luggage. That was checked. But then I didn't have room for 25 pounds of blood oranges that I had to go out and pick before I left. And so I took out all my clothes from my suitcase. I just packed the essentials and put in the bag of blood oranges. And they're like, didn't you come in last week with like these things in there? I'm like,
she's a mule.
I'm like, wait a second. TSA now recognizes me by the fruit I have in my bag. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I did. That was you that asked me. That they remembered it was like insane.
That's
but
so cool.
I'm always doing the San Francisco, Newark route. So I don't know. Maybe we have the same like cycle of work cycle or something. I don't know.
I love that. I want people to be able to find you, read about the new farm. It's on your website. Can you give us that?
The website. Yes, the website is very cryptic right now, but it's robertsinski.com.
Okay.
And there is some information. Rob's about to write an update. You know, we're all like running around like chickens. We have so much to do. And he's made a curtain rod for me today for the pop-up space.
Oh, sweet.
And just sent me a photo. He made it out of conduit, so it's holding up the curtains downtown.
That's why you two together are still 30 years later?
No, it's 28 years.
Okay, almost.
I look at him and go like, wow, it's a good thing we had kids because I can track the years. Otherwise, I would have no idea how long we've been married.
I feel a little bit the same way. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on Drinking on the Job podcast to, break the story, because people are going to hear it and go, incredible.
It's only the start.
It's only the beginning. But the wines are, if you find the Robert Sinski label anywhere in retail, on restaurants, they're some of the top California producers, one of my all-time favorites. Maria, you're going to give us, we've done this before, but give us your last meal and your last drink.
Oh my God, my last...
And your last piece of music.
Okay, but this isn't going to be very exciting. My last meal is probably going to be a really good pizza.
Pizza, good.
With olives, but very good crust. Mm-hmm. Very good, maybe a little cacio e cavoli on it. And then my last drink is going to be a perfect rye Manhattan with one cube.
Love it.
And three really delicious cherries.
All right.
And then my last song. Did you say my last...
Yeah, what are you listening to? What would you like to listen to if your last day on the planet?
Oh my God!
Or let me put it a different way. You could put You could put huge speakers over the vineyard, the farm, and around your tasting room restaurant. What song or what album would be playing to greet people as they came to see you?
Well, maybe Billie Holiday.
Okay.
I actually really like Billie Holiday.
Okay.
I'm really getting into Billie Holiday. Okay. Like, there's so many new songs, but Billie Holiday's been super intriguing to me lately. So maybe that Low, and you can come in and watch the fire and listen to Billie Holiday and have a cocktail or a glass of wine.
I'm there.
And the acoustics are going to be so perfect in the restaurant, so you'll be able to hear everything.
I know. You guys are audiophiles as well.
We're also going deaf because we're old, so. And the lighting will be good.
Okay, there you go. And please make the font big on the menu for me. I want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast again. I'm so happy to tell this story.
Thank you for having me.
You're so brilliant. I just want to say thank you.
Oh, I'm not that brilliant, but I'm like a light bulb, right? I'm an LED. But thank you, John. Thank you for having me. It's always good to chat with you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check us out at dotjpodcast.com. Until then, I'll see you at the bar.